Okay. It is time now for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Everybody, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, thoughts, help you lead a more positively minded life. And the way you get to that is through learning about people. Learning about yourself, learning about other people. In my 25 years experience as a couples and family therapist, I found that people do not know how to effectively have a good communication with each other. Worse than that, what I find happens with most couples is they lose respect for each other. This leads to the common but terrible condition where people are married but treat each other as if they're a nuisance. You ever have that? You know, you feel like that person is just in your way. You know what I'm talking about. Like when you're afraid of your mate, you don't want to talk to them because you're afraid to tell the truth, because you don't deal or respect your mate's ability to deal with honesty. Well, I can fully understand it. People try to avoid trouble. Who wants to have noise at home? Today I want to show you some things about it that I think might be able to help you. A lot of the reason why people do not talk to each other is because one of the other person may have deeply emotional overreactions. It's a funny thing. There are people who have, about one quarter of all the people in the world, have these very, very deep emotional overreactions. And then there's another quarter who have no emotions whatsoever. I mean, they show no emotions, they're all thinking. And it's a funny thing about the two of them, how they get together. The thinking types always get together with the emotional types. It's almost like you as a thinking type need to have an emotional type around so that you can kind of light a spark, you know, to your deadness. I can fully understand that he or she in your life may have a tendency towards having a hysterical reaction. And that's what we're going to talk about today, hysteria. Histrionics, this whole idea of what it's about and what it means. And I want you to understand it in its extreme and in its more moderate forms. You develop a private world that you live in when you live with a hysterical person. You know, if you're married or coupled and you have somebody who has these deep hysterical reactions, you feel very much alone. Because if you're in a long-term relationship with a person who has big reactions, you avoid them. You avoid their big reactions. You begin to avoid it. And I understand. So this is a message for both of you, the one who has the outbursts and the one who lives with them. The picture isn't necessarily good. The future isn't bright. There's a loneliness that's inevitable for both of you unless we deal with this in some way, bringing it to light and giving you a much better life. You have to deal with the hysteria. And that's what I'm trying to give you today. Knowledge and information about dealing with your own histrionics or somebody else's. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here at WBAI 99.5 FM today. We're dealing with a sensitive subject today. The person who has hysterical outbursts and what it's like to live with them, and if it's what it's like to be them, and what you can do about it. And I know I've got your attention because it's a funny thing. In one-fourth of all people have this reaction. Now, there's an extreme of it where the person is really possessed by this sense of hysteria. In this extreme, where you have the person is just completely possessed by it, that person may have difficulty achieving emotional intimacy in romantic or sexual relationships. Without being aware of it, they often act out a role of victim or princess, one or the other, in their relationships with others. They may seek to control their partners through emotional manipulation or seductiveness on one level, and then displaying a marked dependency on them on the other level. So here's the thing. You have somebody who's always losing it emotionally, and they're very dependent on you, but they intimidate you with the emotions. Very interesting, huh? Individuals with this way of being often have impaired relationships with people of the same sex. See, they don't get along with friends of the same sex because their sexually provocative interpersonal style sometimes seems like a threat to your friend's relationships. You know, like if you have a girlfriend and you're this kind of person, you're afraid their boyfriend's going to respond to you. So they tend to have more male friends than female friends. They may have their usual routine. They're usually intolerant of or frustrated by situations that involve delayed gratification. They always want immediate satisfaction. They have a lust to travel. They have to get out of the place. They have to go somewhere. They call themselves very often, I'm a force of nature. And they feel like they've got to get away. Although they can initiate a job or project with great enthusiasm, their interest may lag quickly. They find something wrong with the project. Their long-term relationships may be neglected to make ways for exciting new relationships. You know, the person's footing is kind of tenuous. So what's it like to be this, and what's it like to be related to this kind of person? And, hey, that's what we're talking about today. It's a sensitive subject, but I think we're going to learn something. Now, my colleagues in psychiatry and psychology are going to object to me using the term hysterical because after a long debate, they decided that it was too much of a layperson's pejorative word, so they changed the word to histrionic. And they said, no, we'll call it histrionic instead of hysterical. But this show's for the people, not the shrinks. We understand hysterical. It includes that funny combination of rage and tears, screaming and sometimes throwing things, uncontrollable outbursts that resist reason. You know, do you know what a hysterical person is? Do you know what it's like to be hysterical? Well, I don't like the word hysterical. What I don't like about the word hysterical is that it has as its roots the origin hyster, H-Y-S-T-E-R, which relates to female, like in, you know, hysterectomy. It suggests that it's a female disorder. Well, we all know that it's not. Men get hysterical too, and when they do, they can do far greater damage than women who get hysterical. So what it is, what makes it happen? Well, one thing seems for sure, it's not just psychological, it's some combination. What makes one person able to receive and process information in a relatively calm way, and another one reacts with outbursts and rage and sensitivity? Seems to be always a physical component. Whether it's hormonal or stress-related, the nervous system is on hair trigger with hysterical people, and there's good news and bad news there. The person who tends to have hysterical outbursts is usually very energetic, very creative, very lively, bright and fun to be with most of the time. They're filled with energy that's readily available, and they can plunge into a situation with their whole mind and body. They can give more to a situation than anyone can. They can encompass it completely. They can be the greatest of lovers, capable of a great passion and lustful desire. They appreciate beauty. They love to have fun. They're risk takers in and out of bed. That's the good news. The bad news is they're scary when they get triggered negatively. They can be very destructive. They can say things that could hurt during the episode, and they will fetch deep into every one of your weakest areas to find something to hurt you with because the person feels powerless. And when they're powerless, they go for the jugular. The pain and damage of these outbursts last a long time. Usually the hormones and the energy run high, but that's a problem also. So although it may not be nice to be around, it's a rough thing to live with, and the future never feels bright when it's out of control, because after the romance and the honeymoon, living with a hysterical person is never feeling safe. You just never feel safe. And it tends to send the partner into a private world where truth is hidden. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be taking your calls about this today. Not yet, but soon. So look at how hysteria fosters falsehood. Because what happens if you have somebody who overreacts and they ask you a question, you say to yourself, what's the right answer? Because if you give the wrong answer, they're going to have a major reaction. So you tend to lie. Then when a lie gets discovered, there's more hysterical stuff and probably a breakup. And I'm willing to make a guess that almost all divorces are the result of a hysterical reaction to a lie that is uncovered. But the lie was there at the beginning because the person was afraid to discuss some issues with the person who was having these reactions. Therefore, if you want to have a long-term, lifelong relationship with somebody who is that energetic and you want to be in an open, honest, loving partnership filled with truth, beauty, and love, filled with cooperation and safety, where your partner is your best friend, someone with whom you can share everything, where passion and sex stay alive forever, then you either have to not choose a person who gets hysterical or get the hysterical element fixed or learn how to deal with it better. Hey, I mentioned sex just now. What happens with partners of hysterical people is that over time, the resentment gets so buried. This is a funny thing. Part of the reason that people are attracted to people who have these big overreactions is because they're so sexually vibrant. But then what happens is you get married to them is you get so much resentment, you lose interest in them sexually. So now you've taken this bird, this free bird, and you've caged it, and it's frustrated because it doesn't have a source of sex anymore, a source of physical love. That makes the person even more nervous. Think about it. One of the reasons you fall in love with them is because they're such passionate lovers, and then on the other hand, you lose all sexual interest in them. What does that do to the other person? Okay, let's get back to the two elements of this, okay? The physiological component. Now, I'm not a nutritionist, and most of you know there are definite contributors to high stress, which is sometimes a cause of hysteria. I was passing a Starbucks, and I was watching some kids, maybe 12 years old, walking out of Starbucks, and one of them was saying, I'm having a double latte cappy, you know, one of those things. And they were wired, stoned on caffeine, the new drug, available everywhere, no controls. 12, 13, 14 years old, going in for their double black, you know, whatever they are, and they just get high on caffeine, right? Sugars and caffeine are known to have a direct link to short trigger nervous functioning. So hysteria very often can be a physiological reaction. On the other hand, valerian root, skullcap, kava tea, chamomile, these are the replacements that seem to calm a person down and lead to more balance. But this is one of the first lines of attack. I'm not going to advise this because this is not my area. Mine is the mental stuff. But medicine, you know, fascinates me. And it's obvious that hormonal imbalances play a key role in this hysteria. It's too obvious. You look at it, it's just there. When we say hormonal imbalances, people are always functioning on progesterone and testosterone, but the functioning of all of the hormones and how they work are essential as well. So my second line of understanding is to get a good picture of the functioning of the hormones. And this is done through an endocrinologist, I believe, not a family physician or a gynecologist. Find one that does their own testing. Is there a holistically oriented, nutritionally minded, board certified endocrinologist out there? Is there such a person? I've never met one. Maybe it's too much to ask for, but if he or she does exist, please put him in touch with me. A lot of people will go to you. We want somebody who is a medical person, you know, so if you're insurance reimbursable and board certified and holistically oriented, nutritionally minded, what a nice thing to be able to find. So we're looking at a three-pronged approach to hysteria. The first is evaluation, finding out why this happens physically. The second is doing all you can between diet and exercise to find a little more balance. And the third is to deal with the mental factors, the mind stuff that leads to this. That's where I come in. And this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. We're looking at what causes hysteria, and I'm presenting my case how I believe that the outbursts of rage and anger in relationships, which I am calling hysterical outbursts, are damaging to the self and definitely interfere with loving long-term relationships because it makes the other person get intimidated, and as a result, they just shut up. They just get quiet, and they stop talking to you. And therefore, they're lying. Therefore, you never get to know who they are. I'm talking about this because in my practice as a psychotherapist and in my teaching of students in the field of psychology, I found that very few people know how to deal with hysteria, neither their own or someone else's. What do you do when somebody is having a hysterical outburst? What do you do? How do you handle it? When a person is suddenly raging and screaming. I mentioned the other day about a case where a woman was, an elderly woman was taken off Prozac, not Prozac, she was taken off one of those serotonin reuptake inhibitors a little too suddenly, and she had this hysterical reaction, which is known as a serotonin withdrawal syndrome. The reaction is so hysterical that it becomes violent. And she was violent. She was 80 years old and beating up people. I mean, hitting people. And you may think that that's almost funny, but this is somebody who is wielding a hand to hurt. And she was hitting people, banging doors, and she was screaming. They couldn't get her to a doctor or a hospital. She refused to go. How do you deal with them? They are saying things, usually paranoid in nature. And what you do is you try to counter those things. The average person will try to talk reasonably to a person who is having a hysterical reaction. That's not the way to do it. Reason doesn't matter. Logic doesn't matter. What matters is the following. A hysterical person does not feel safe at that moment. Someone once described hysteria as the way it feels is like you're being chased by a tiger. Can you imagine? Imagine if you're in a panic and you're being chased by a tiger. It's coming after you, and it's coming after you, and you're running for all it's worth. And somebody else across the street says, oh, you can slow down, there's no tiger there, but you believe you have a tiger coming after you. Right? So if that's happening, you have this kind of panic response, and these panic responses is taking over at the moment. So what you want to do is now somebody's going to just talk to you. The only thing that you could do when somebody is having a panic response is to try to provide them with a sense of safety, with a sense that they can't hurt you, they can't hurt themselves, and that they're okay, everything is okay. You do not talk back reasonably. They scream at you and they say things, you just don't care about me anymore, you are this, and they're usually accusatory. You, and it keeps going on, and you did this and you did that, and their mouth is moving and they're accusatory and blaming. And you showed up late, and then you said, well, no, I got here on time. That's all you have to do. If you try to get into the content of the argument, it becomes more and more at you. That's not the issue. The issue is when you see somebody who is hysterical, you've got to remember in your mind, this child is frightened. This child is frightened. If you remember that the child is frightened in the other person, then no matter what they say, you see through it and you see the frightened child. If you can picture the frightened child behind those words, you'll be able to embrace them spiritually, emotionally, maybe not physically. But there'll be a way that you can get to them, I'm with you. And one of the ways you try to do that is by understanding what they're saying, but not listening to the very content, the very words. I could see you're very upset. I could see it. I'm sorry you feel so, so bad. And if they accuse you of something, it's no big deal at that moment. Because, you know, somebody who's in a hysterical, rageful outburst is like somebody who has just gotten drunk. It is not the time to reason with them. You don't get somebody who has just drunk a bottle of gin, who is coming in sloppy drunk and say, we got to talk about your drinking. It's not a time to do it. The middle of a hysterical outburst is not the time to try to get this person to face what they're doing. Yes, you could leave. Yes, you could. May not be a bad idea. If it becomes violent, if it becomes physical, you could leave. You can get out of there. That's not a bad idea. Or if you could be there, you tolerate, but you tolerate with a loving mind. Because if you're just tolerating, it's not going to work. But the one thing you do not do is you do not engage hysteria with hysteria. You don't fight back, scream back, argue back. It goes nowhere. A hysterical person doesn't feel safe in the world, and they usually never did, you know, but it's at the moment they keep thinking that if they could get all the things right, they would feel safe. They want marriage, they want money, they want the right house, they want the right family, they want the right furniture, they want the right friends. They think, if I was only loved, I would be okay. And unfortunately, you could love them all they want, and it's not true. That's not going to make the safety. Because the love that was necessary many, many years ago. And that they're not going to find. So you have to deal with it. So as well as the physical factors, there's a lot of emotional factors that lead to this condition. In fact, there's so many, it would be impossible for me to cover them all. But you could sum it up in one phrase, person doesn't feel safe. They never feel safe because on some level, the person's always living in some kind of latent fear. And they think that whenever it pops up, that it's real. So no matter who they marry, no matter how much money they have, the problem remains. So, you know, one thing does happen, though. Age is an interesting thing because age slows you down. So when you have this kind of panicky, hysterical stuff and you get older, you slow down, your metabolism changes, and you start getting a little more silent and a little more silent. So age works. Then there's therapy and meditation and medication. You know? Some people, they medicate. Some people, they meditate. Some people, they go into therapy. It all works on some level or another. But here's a few aspects you want to consider. One thing you want to consider is what happened if you want to try to figure out what triggered a hysterical outburst. You can always look for a narcissistic wound. Now, this is a very interesting thing. What is a narcissistic wound? It's a wound to the image of a person's self. If a person has an image of themselves as being one thing or another, I am a good person, I am a nice person, I am a fair person, and something breaks through that, something tells them that whatever they think of themselves is not true, that will react in a major hysterical reaction. So you could always look for where is the wound? Where did this person get hurt? What is hurting them at the moment? What is making them feel so bad? And there's a lot more to learn. There's a lot more to learn about it, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be taking your calls as well. So let me go over what that when it gets at its worst, most people who have, when this is at its very worst, they are uncomfortable in situations which they are not the center of attention. They like to be the center of attention. They interact with others by some kind of provocative, interactive, almost sexually, you could say it's almost sexually seductive, but maybe doesn't have sex as the intention, you know? But there's kind of this loose way of being. They display rapidly shifting and shallow expression of emotions. They use their physical appearance to draw attention to themselves. You know, so they'll use their clothing and they'll use their stuff to kind of bring attention. They have a style of speech that is excessively impressionistic, and they use a lot of superlatives. Fantastic, wonderful. They show self-dramatization, exaggerated expression of emotions, and they're usually short-term. You know, sometimes the emotions just come in and go right out. They're suggestible. They're usually easily influenced by other people or circumstances. They could read a book and suddenly think that this book has the answer to all the new medicine in the Western world, and they find things that they'll go flying off to different places to try to find answers, and they'll take trips to California just to see somebody there has a new theory. And they also consider relationships to be much more intimate than they really are, because most of the people really feel like, you know, they feel like they are deeply in love and they have this thing, but they tend to dramatize all of their relationships. In truth, they're not as intimate as they think they are, because on many levels, the person who is that level of hysteria or the histrionic personality usually is afraid of being caged. They don't want to be tied down anywhere. They want to have a lot of options, and they want to be able to move around. So that's the story, friends. We're going to be taking your call right after our break. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I'm going to give you a little music, and when I come back, we'll take your phone calls, and we'll talk about hysteria and hysterical outbursts. Back with you in just a couple of minutes. WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. That's from the latest Cirque du Soleil, Tapis Rouge is the name of the album. It's called Gamelan, G-A-M-E-L-A-N. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. If you just tuned in thinking you're listening to a music station, you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. You're listening to The Positive Mind Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. If you wanted a copy of today's program and the earlier part we did on Hysteria, you would call 212-757-4488. It's 212-757-4488. But here today, we're going to be taking some of your calls. 212-209-2900. It's 212-209-2900. I want to talk to you about your reaction to what we're saying. 212-209-2900. About your reaction to what... But before we do, let's look at the ingredients of a loving relationship. And for this, I turn to a book called The Search for the Real Self by James Masterson, M.D. Now, James Masterson studied what was called the narcissistic personality. Narcissistic personality is one of the roots where a lot of hysteria reign. Narcissistic personality is something that is really to be understood. It has been a field of my study for many years. James Masterson wrote on these criteria for a successful relationship, what you need to have. Number one, of particular necessity, is to maintain a strong, loving relationship, is the ability to perceive the loved one as a complete human being with both good and bad traits. I'm going to repeat that. Is the ability to perceive the person you love as a complete human being with both good and bad traits. Not that you're looking at this human being and she just has good traits. No, good and bad traits. Things you like and things you don't like. It's part of what you do when you love somebody. You see both parts. You don't get angry at the bad and then just love the good. You love both parts. If I am looking at you, I understand. I see you're good. I see you're bad. I love you anyway. That's part of the package. James Masterson, of particular necessity to maintain a strong, loving relationship is the ability to perceive your loved person as a complete human being with good and bad traits. Number two. Of also very important for a good loving relationship is the capacity to be alone and to feel a genuine concern as opposed to desperate need for the one you love. Get this difference. It's like you can be alone and you could be concerned for them, but you don't feel the desperate need for them. This isn't step two in having a healthy relationship. Number three is the capacity to tolerate your own anxiety and depression. You have to tolerate it by yourself. You can't go running to somebody as soon as you feel nervous, and you can't run to somebody the minute you feel depressed. In order to have a successful relationship, you must be able to tolerate your own anxiety and your own depression. Number four, the capacity to commit oneself emotionally without fear of abandonment or fear of engulfment. You know what I mean? You don't have to hold yourself back. You feel like, well, whatever happens, happens, and I'll deal with it when it happens. But you're not in there always worried about being either taken over or abandoned. And here I applaud the courage of this author to dare say it. The capacity, number five, to mourn the loss of a loved one in such a way as to free oneself for a new relationship. So if you're in a relationship, the best way to have a relationship is to have the capacity to give up the person. But not just to throw them away, but to mourn them. I mean, if you break up with them after a number of years, you can mourn them, but you go through the mourning so you could go on to a new relationship. If you're somebody who believes, no, after this relationship, I'll never be with anybody again, I will die, you know, well, maybe you'll never have anybody as good, you know, on the desk, or anybody else good who can be there, anybody as good a lover, or anybody as good, you know, who smells the same, maybe. Maybe you'll never be able to match them, but you'll be able to move on. The capacity to have a good relationship is to be able to get through the death of this relationship, should it happen. Now that's a mouthful, huh? Whew. The bottom line he goes to is that in order to have a successful relationship, you have to be intimate. Now Webster defines intimate as marked by a close association, contact, and familiarity, engaging one's deepest nature. So intimacy is showing your own deepest nature to someone else and them showing you their deepest nature. One of the descriptions I like of intimacy is the word into me see. Look into me. That's being intimate. Into me see. So how can you engage the deepest nature when you don't have contact with it yourself? There's a question, and most people don't. That's why relationships are such a mess and create such chaos. Most people don't have any idea who they are. So how do they do this? Hey, how much time did you spend so far this year dealing with some pain or other related to a relationship, huh? You know, a lot of people occupy most of their lives dealing with the pain related to a relationship. What a distraction. Let's go back to Masterson's recipe. In order to have healthy relationships, one, the ability to perceive loved ones as complete separate human beings with both good and bad traits. How much time do you spend trying to change somebody else or fighting over who they are and how they should be? Number two, the capacity to be alone. How much anguish do you have in your relationship because you're afraid to be alone? Think about that, friends. How much of this relationship anguish do you have is because you're afraid to be alone? Person says, I'm out of here. I'm walking out. I want to get away. Oh, you're saying, I want to get away. And now you're afraid to be alone. See, hold on desperately. Whereas, you know, any couple could just say, all right, let's take a break. Whew. And if I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life, I'll deal with it, but let's take a break. The capacity to feel genuine concern rather than a desperate need for your lover, you know? Number four, the capacity to tolerate anxiety and depression. Now, we all have our moments, but if we need our mate to save us from feeling our own anxiety and our depression, if we do that and we use them and we flock to our mates all the time, then we forget how to deal with it ourselves. Then no wonder we don't feel safe. The histrionic personality and the person with his hysterical outbursts is always flocking to somebody else to save them from the hysteria, to save them from their danger. It would be beautiful if they dealt with it themselves. Number five, the capacity to commit oneself emotionally to another person without the fear of engulfment or abandonment. Now, these fears aren't real. They're straight from childhood. People can't engulf you. You know, they can't. But we have a fear of them engulfing us. You know, unless you want them, unless you want them to, you know, unless you want them to take you over, you know, keep a subway card in your sock so that you can always get away. So you know you can always run away. You know, it's not, they can't do it to you. Nobody could really take you over. But this fear, we live like, oh, I've got to maintain my independence because they might take me over. Well, they can't do it. And the fear of abandonment. Abandonment is such a huge word, abandon. That's what you do to infants on sidewalks, you know? You mean the person may leave you and they may say, I don't want any more of you and I want out of this relationship? That's not abandoned. So we create these fears so that we can hold on desperately. Let's get back to Masterson's final item, and then I'd like to hear from you, and I'm sorry I've held you so long. And remember, if you want a copy of today's program, I know a lot of people are going to want it because I've gotten a lot of mail asking for me to discuss exactly what I'm discussing today. So you would have to call 212-757-4488. Now, Masterson's criteria for a healthy relationship, the capacity to successfully mourn or grieve a lost loved one so that you can move on to another relationship. I think the brave step Masterson took here is to suggest that healthy people should be able to survive the death of a mate and move on to another. Our society likes to foster the belief that real lovers never choose another lover. It's a romantic ideal. It's like, you know, you found your soulmate and then it's over. But a healthy relationship, you will survive. You will survive this mate. And lastly, he suggests that the mourning includes divorce or breaking up. Well, what do you think of that? Can you relate to any of these six categories as a primary source of your relationship difficulty? And this is Armand DeMille. We've got a few minutes. I do want to take your calls. I'm sorry to have kept you waiting so long. Rocky, if you would, give me a hand. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Armand. I'm calling because this historical pattern is something I've recognized in several of my family members, and one of my sisters is going through a divorce right now. It fits a lot of the exact description that you described in terms of the way she related with her husband. And
how do you feel when one of your family members is going through, tell me which one of your family members? Your mother?
No, my mother died many years ago.
Uh-huh.
I'm the oldest of five girls. I had two older brothers.
So you have sisters?
I have four sisters, four younger sisters.
So as the oldest child, you have a particularly interesting, difficult situation. Older children to younger sisters are generally you're the one who's supposed to be exercising some kind of control over them.
Right, and as I said, my mother died in 1983.
Yeah.
So it was quite a while ago.
So you're a surrogate mom.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways.
Right. How I feel about it, it's very, sickening almost to my stomach when I see it.
And what do you try to do? You try to talk them out of it? You try to give them the logic? Do you try to do what most people do? Tell them that, you know, their position is really, that you love them and their position is illogical and their relationship
is
going down. What do you do?
Well, in this case, I was trying to, once I felt that my sister was open to hearing certain things, tell her to look, you know, a lot of things that she would say, I would tell her, you know, you sound just like daddy or, you know, I hear, you know, do you hear what you're saying or...
You see, now that is a natural thing that a lot of people would do.
Mm.
They would think that by reminding somebody who is hysterical that they sound just like their miserable fathers would make them calm down.
Well, I wouldn't say it to her when she was hysterical. It would be like...
Yeah, or even afterwards, you know.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I understand. You're furious. You see, you're angry. What you really want to say is, shut up! What you really want to say, go ahead, try it. Will you just shut up and stop opening your yap? See what that's like. Try to say it.
Oh, I don't know.
I know. Yeah. Say it anyway. Say it on here right now.
Shut up.
That's right. Say it again.
Shut up and please, just stop it.
Right. Stop it and shut your fat mouth. You want to try shut your fat mouth? Try it. Hey, what do you got to lose? You're going to be on the air. Your sisters are probably listening.
I'm going to give her the tape.
Right. Here we go. All right. Yeah, try it again.
Just shut up.
Shut your fat mouth. Right. Isn't that great? Now, this has nothing to do with people who are obese. These are just fat mouths. These mouths that are coming out with these words that, oh, they're murderous. And here, what's your first name, by the way?
Kathy.
Kathy says, let me hear it again, Kathy.
Just shut up.
Shut your fat mouth.
I
like that expression. Can you imagine what would happen if you said that to your sister the next time she got bent out of shape?
She'd hang up on me.
So you see, you're in that position where you're like a surrogate parent.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is you got to give up your position as well. Mm-hmm. In other words, when you hear them, you got to give it up. Because there's a part of you, Kathy, by this point, that has got the same energy built up inside you. You just have controlled it for so long that you can't stand it when somebody gets away with being hysterical. You know, you can't stand it because you've been such a good girl. You've been so controlling of yourself and taking care of everybody. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a rage that's built up in there. You know, and so it gets to a point where, I don't know, one of your sisters gets into one of her things. Have you ever just become hysterical yourself?
I have had a couple of, you know, times, instances, yes. Mm-hmm.
What does it feel like?
Well, I thought it would, I thought it would relieve a lot for me of certain, let's say, repressed feelings, but it really didn't.
No, you would be filled with shame, you know?
Yeah.
Problem with you is you'd be filled with shame and it would not relieve it. What would be great is if you had a form of therapy that helped you, a psychotherapy that helped you get to the bottom of this so that you could feel it and process it. What most people do is they feel it, they have an outburst, and they feel guilty. And then they kind of push themselves down again. There are certain psychotherapies, and I mean, I'm not a big fan of psychotherapy, even though that's what I do for a living. There is some psychotherapies that are really terrific because they allow you some of the active ways of doing it, like Gestalt therapy, bioenergetics, intense feeling psychotherapy. They get you to let it hang out. In fact, on my website, which is called thepositivemind.com, there's an article on there called the Intense Feeling Psychotherapy, Intense Feeling Process of Psychotherapy. You might read that,
mm-hmm.
and it would do you some benefit, you know, to be able to give yourself some venue for just expressing your own passions,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to get them out there a little further.
Right. I went to your website, but I couldn't get past the first page. It had, you know, the WBAI, listening.
Scroll down.
Okay.
You got to scroll down. It doesn't look like you should scroll down.
Oh, okay,
right.
I was clicking.
What? Yeah, scroll down. Okay. There's a lot of stuff in there. There's some cartoons. There's some good jokes.
Uh-huh.
There's a definite picture of a little cat in a hat. Do you see the cat in the hat?
I'm not on it.
All right, it's there. When you get to it, you'll see it.
Uh-huh.
There's a little kitten I found, and I put it inside a hat, and I photographed it.
Oh, okay.
And it looks so cute, I put it on the website.
Uh-huh.
All right, thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure.
Bye.
212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi there.
Hi
there.
Let me just turn the radio down.
Sure. Hey, Rocky, this is flawless. I was talking about, that's my engineer.
I didn't expect to get on the radio.
You did it. This is it.
I did. It's amazing, huh? I just want to say that the first, the previous stuff that you were talking about in reference to being involved with somebody who needs to travel a lot and is constantly, not hysterical, but not available because they're so busy. Something about the exterior, you're saying that they are almost abducted in a way.
Yeah.
And I was just curious about, I just wanted to hear more about that in reference to...
You're probably talking about, you're talking about there's a man you care about who's out of town a lot?
No, I've been married to somebody who's like that.
Married to somebody who's traveled.
Yes, who's traveled a lot, and we're now getting divorced, but it's and I'm getting, and everything's getting blamed onto me that I wasn't available, but I've been involved with this person who, married to this person who's been constantly traveling and moving and can't stay still.
How long were you married?
4 years.
4 years. And do you mind if I ask how old you are?
I'll be 43 tomorrow.
All right, well listen now, you tried something. Two children, two damaged kids, you and he, got together 4 years ago. Clearly, he's not settled with himself. Clearly, you're not settled with yourself. But two kids try to get together and they say, hey, we.